Hey everyone, I'm Janet B. I'm recovered from compulsive eating and bulimia. So imagine this. A newcomer walks into a room, is told to admit she's powerless, and then 3 seconds later is told to stick to a food plan. It doesn't make sense. It's like a doctor telling someone to admit she has cancer and then saying, great, now that you've admitted you have cancer, now go make your cancer cells stop multiplying. The Big Book doesn't say that. The Big Book says that once we admit we're powerless, it will provide us for a blueprint for finding and accessing power. Not like, you know, Star Wars, the power within me, but the power of God. And that power will result in a change to our lives so that by the time we're through these steps, we have a personality change sufficient to overcome compulsive eating. A personality change that's so strong that we're like different people. We lose interest in selfish things, become interested in our fellows. Our fears fall away. We know freedom, happiness, and peace. So this Big Book we talk about is really a blueprint for our recovery journey. It gets us from point A, where we're powerless, to point B, where we have power. But again, it isn't my power. It's the power of God. And it's like a pick line of grace going right into my heart and just kicking out the obsession. So what happens? We admit we're powerless in step one. And then step two is the step that says we came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, practically, like, what does that mean? And what do we do? Do we just get a food plan and move on? Well, that doesn't work because we're powerless. Remember, the book tells us we have no defense against the obsession when it strikes. So we're going to start now. Melissa's going to help me with some reading. We're going to read right from the text. We're going to start the very last paragraph of More About Alcoholism, and then we're going to go right into the Finding God text chapters, We Agnostics, and then a little bit of how it works. So we are starting on page 43, third paragraph.
Okay, great. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
Okay, so Melissa's talked about how to find God, right? We're talking about that. But now we're talking about, like, why do we even need to find God in the first place? Like, why is it so important? And this tells us we have no effective mental defense against the first compulsive bite. There's a disconnect in my brain that when I go to reach for a bag of this, or, you know, and say, I'm just going to have one, or a bite of this and say, I'm just going to have one, my brain doesn't remember that I'm unable to stop at one. So even when I honestly wanted to stop, I couldn't stop eating compulsively. So if we don't have a mental defense, we need a different kind of defense, right? And that defense, the defense that our Big Book talks about, is a spiritual defense. It says our defense must come from a higher power. So the group can't protect me. My own brain can't protect me, that it's talking about a higher power, capital H, capital P, meaning God. But again, how do we access this power? And so let's flip the page to the very beginning of We Agnostics, where it starts answering these questions.
Okay, page 44 says, in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer.
Okay, so wanting to stop, but being unable to defines an addict, right? People used to say about me, because I had like 50 different sponsors and I spent about 7 years in OA before I recovered. People would say, well, she doesn't want to stop. I wanted to stop more than anything, but I couldn't. And that's what defines an addict, wanting to stop, but being unable to. And our book tells us the solution to addiction is a spiritual experience. Now, we throw that term spiritual experience around a lot, but what exactly is it? So the big book gives us a pretty robust description back on page 25.
The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves.
So a spiritual experience is not having more serenity or feeling less resentful, or really even having a vision of God. That may be some kind of spiritual experience, but it's not the kind that our book is talking about. The kind of spiritual experience that the big book is talking about always, 100% of the time, results in recovery from alcoholism or, for us, compulsive eating. So if a person hasn't stopped eating compulsively, they haven't had the kind of spiritual experience the big book talks about, or they've had it in the past and eroded it. You know, often when people say, well, I'm not abstinent, but I have more serenity, what that really is doing is just perpetuating the denial syndrome, right? We didn't come into Serenity Anonymous. We came into, you know, Overeaters Anonymous. But they're talking about really the miracle of God coming in and rewiring our hearts so that we become more and more like him, so that our priorities become less what we want and more what his priorities are. So how do we get it, right? That's a $64,000 question. Well, first, here's how we don't get it. And so we're back on page 44, the fourth paragraph.
If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly.
So a moral code or a philosophy of life is something that I try to achieve by my own power, by saying, I'll try to be nicer, I'll try to be a better person. Every time I saw the movie Gone with the Wind, I would say, I want to be more like Melanie. Like, she was a really nice one. And like within, I don't know, an hour, it's like, yeah, there's no way. I'm not like her at all. I couldn't, on my own willpower, be a better person. I would say, I'll just try to live up to this religious standard, this moral standard, but I couldn't because I didn't have the power.
Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power?
Okay, this is so important, that first sentence, lack of power, that was our dilemma. Remember, like, back to our, you know, middle school science, whenever we wanted to solve a problem, we had to first define the problem. So what's our problem here? It isn't lack of desire or lack of knowledge or lack of a perfect food plan. It's lack of power. So it doesn't matter how hard I try, I can't, right? I have blue eyes. If I tried to turn them brown because I really wanted brown eyes, I couldn't do it. And no one would expect me to, you know, without colored contacts or something, right? If someone has diabetes, the problem is a defective pancreas. As a compulsive eater, my problem is lack of power.
Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem.
Okay, so now they are telling me the number one, the numero uno purpose of this book, to help me find the power that I need. And this sentence gives me my first clues about this power, right? If we don't have a concept of God, this can tell us, right? The sentence, its main object of this book is to enable you to, here it is, find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. So let's play detective and see what clues are here about God, right? We're looking to find God. Let's see what we can find out about God here. If this power is going to solve my problems, then first, it must have a consciousness, right? The wind is a power greater than myself, but no one would ever expect the wind, even if it was hurricane force wind, to solve my problem. Wind doesn't have a consciousness. Second, this power must be smart if it can figure out how to solve my problem. I have two master's degrees. I couldn't figure out how to solve my problems. So it's got to be smart. Third, it must be strong because this illness kicked my butt is way stronger than I am. So this power with a capital P has to be stronger than me and stronger than this illness. And then fourth, and to me most important, this power must care about me. Otherwise, why would it bother trying to solve my problems? So able to think, smart, strong, and cares about me, dare I say, loves me. So now we have our first clues about God.
That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God. For we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudices.
So they've gone from power and they say, okay, this power, God, and we're going to talk about God. And then they anticipate, you know, people saying, oh, wait, no, I can't deal with God. I can deal with some amorphous, you know, shapeless power, but not God. And then they tell us why we have that problem. They tell us that we have prejudices. And prejudices are something that block us seeing something, something or someone the way it really is. So the next paragraph is going to talk about the different types of prejudice that get in our way of a relationship with God. Now, prejudice doesn't just mean thinking less of people who are a different race or religion. It's having a preconceived notion about God in this case that blocks us.
Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. We looked upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and an inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. We looked askance at many individuals who claimed to be godly. How could a supreme being have anything to do with it all?
Okay, so this paragraph gives us five impediments to a belief in God. And then there's a sixth one in the next chapter. So what I always do when I'm working with someone is ask them to go through these prejudices and see which apply to them. So the first one, the concept of God I was given as a child is inadequate for some reason. Two, believing in God makes me weak. Three, I can't believe in something or someone that I can't understand. Four, if there was a God, he wouldn't run the universe so poorly. By the way, this is one that Bill Wilson had, right? He said the war, everything he'd seen in the war made him think that if there was a devil, he was the boss. I mean, those are the words he uses on page 11. So that's one that a lot of us have, that if there was a God, why would he allow human trafficking, or, you know, my relative to die of cancer, or whatever we think shouldn't be. That's a prejudice that some of us had, that if there was a God, he wouldn't allow this. And to that I say, just as easily, we could look at people like, I don't know, Mother Teresa, or the time when we were driving and not paying attention and we should have hit that car, but miraculously we didn't. It's like we're quick to use all the bad things as evidence of no God. But how often do we use the good things of evidence of yes, God? So that's a big one that gets in our way. The fifth one, people who claim to believe in God aren't very nice. And to that, I would say, I could tell you that I'm an Eskimo and be really nasty, and then you'd think all Eskimos are really not nice people. But the fact is, the matter is, I'm not an Eskimo, even if I say I am. So if people are saying they're godly and going out, I don't know, robbing banks and killing people, probably best to not use that person as your example of a godly person. And the sixth one that's often a big one for people is, if I believe in God, I can't do what I want, right? The big book tells us that the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Well, if I really believe there's a God, I can't cheat on my taxes. You know, I can't like do all these things that I want to do that I think God wouldn't want me to do. So it's my job, right, when I'm going through the steps and I'm on step two, to find out the reasons for my disbelief, to look at my prejudices, and to see what's blocking me from believing in God. See, this is where the work is, right? The work isn't just meeting and phone calls. Those things are important, but at its essence, this program requires that we find out what's blocking us from God, because God is our only hope.
Yes, we of agnostic temperament, this is on page 46, paragraph 2. Yes, we of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. Even though it was impossible for us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God.
Which is God. So this line should forever put to rest the argument that a person's higher power can be a light bulb or a chair or even the group. The power is God. But, you know, there's a caveat here. It's God as conceived of by the individual, right? The big book takes no position on the religious aspects of God, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, or no religion whatsoever. Fine, all included. But this higher power is described in the next paragraph of at least being a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, holding this world together.
Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps.
Okay, this paragraph is so exciting to me. At one point, I went through the book to see when do we get our first infusion of power, right? Because that's what I need. And here it is. And here's how to know if we've taken a second step. It says, as soon as we admit that it's possible that God exists, we get some results. And what are those results? Power and direction. Power over the obsession with food and direction, as in what we need to do with our lives. And it says we begin to get this provided we take other simple steps. In other words, provided that we immediately move on. This is where we begin to move from like point A, where we're powerless, to point B, where God gives us power over the obsession. And if this still seems a bit difficult, we can take heart from the following lines on page 46.
We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men.
Right. And for those of us whose current conception doesn't work, we can just fire that God. We don't have to keep the conception of God we were given as kids. We are allowed to come up with our own conception. So now we're at page 47, first paragraph.
When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to effect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him.
So we are going to have a relationship with God, not just learn about him, right? This book isn't a class. It's a textbook insofar as its directions, but it's directions about how to get a relationship with God. There's no test at the end of the book. It's about a relationship, not about how much head knowledge about God we can get.
Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this spiritual cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built.
So according to the big book, being willing to believe gets us the same results as actually believing. We can make a decision to believe it. And as soon as we believe and are willing to believe, we're on our way to recovery. Okay, so we just talked about the prejudices that can block us off from God. And just to make sure we cover all the bases, let's now look at the spiritual cataracts that the book talks about that can block us from seeing God. And on page 55 of the big book, it tells us more about the spiritual cataracts that can block us off from God. So we're at the page 55, the second full paragraph.
Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by pomp, by calamity, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there.
My favorite sentence in the big book, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. This paragraph is amazing when we really think about it. They are telling us that when God created me, he put inside me, along with a heart, lungs, kidneys, the fundamental idea of himself. He put that in all of us. He loves us so much that he put the knowledge of himself within us. But just like cataracts can block a person from seeing the world, there are things that give us spiritual cataracts that can block us from seeing God. And these things, the book tells us, are calamity, right? Bad things that have happened to us or those we love. Pomp, which is worship of myself, wanting the sun, the moon, the stars, and the planets to all bow down to me and everyone to do my will and everything to go according to my script. That's pomp, worship of myself, and worship of other things, such as a job, money, status, getting married, having children, how our children are doing, what other people think about us. Basically, these things are our idols. And we should ask ourselves always what our idols are, right? What's the thing that if I don't have fill in the blank, I can never be happy? So these are our idols and we need to get rid of them. So once we've cleared up our prejudices and our spiritual cataracts, we can go on to the ABCs in chapter 5.
Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Okay. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And see that God could and would if he were sought.
Okay, so we want to go through these ABCs, right? So first, do we believe that we're a compulsive eater and cannot manage our own lives? So if a person says, no, I don't really believe that, well, then it's a step one issue. So before we even get into the nitty gritty about God and surrender to God, we need to go back to step one. But if they say yes, then we move on. Do you believe that probably no human power could have relieved our compulsive eating? Yes, most people, we've tried enough things that's easy. We can say, yes, I believe that. Then comes the harder one, to believe that God could and would restore me to sanity if he were sought. So here's some things, a way to go about that in a simple way. So let's start with, do you believe that God could restore other people to sanity? Not necessarily you, but other people. And then we have to say, well, yeah, I've seen him do it for other people. So of course he can. Okay, then next, once we're past that, do you believe that God could restore you to sanity if he wanted to? He may not want to. But could he, if he wanted to? And then if we're honest, we have to say, well, yeah, he's God. Okay, he could for everyone else. He could for me. But where a lot of us get stuck is that he would, that he will restore me to sanity. And here are some reasons why people generally give for saying, yeah, God could restore me to sanity, but he won't. And here's why. So there's generally five reasons someone will give. One, I don't deserve it because I've done this really bad thing or I've done some really bad things. You know, specific things we can think of that make us unworthy. And if that's the case, then, you know, just we can be reminded that in the ninth step, we get a chance to fix it all, right? All the founders of this program did things they weren't proud of, and that's why they built an amends part into this. So we get a chance to fix it. That doesn't disqualify us. The second thing is people may say, well, he would help people with cancer because they can't help themselves, but I caused this. And, you know, a couple of things on that. Yes, the big book says selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our illness. So let's say we believe, yeah, I was so selfish and self-centered. I caused this illness and I deserve it. And therefore, God's not going to help me. I would say, what if you were running across the street and you didn't look both ways and you got hit by a truck and broke both your legs? When the ambulance came, would you say, don't take me to the hospital. Don't take me to an orthopedic surgeon to set my legs. It's totally my fault because I didn't look both ways. And so now I'm just going to have to live with shattered legs for the rest of my life. Guarantee not one of us would do that. But suddenly, right, when it comes to God, I get all high and mighty and on my high horse. And, oh, I have to be deserving of God. Otherwise, I can't go to him. And I would say, go to him with the broken legs. Go to him with the spiritually bankrupt soul. It's okay. Number three, this is similar to the first one. God won't help me. I don't deserve it because I'm just not worthy. So this isn't so much I've done something bad, like I've robbed a bank. This is just this vague feeling of guilt and shame and low self-esteem and unworthiness. And here's what I would say to that. We might be able to find a therapist and pay them a lot of money, and the therapist will sit there and give us lots of reasons why we are worthy. And what I would say to someone is, yeah, maybe you're not worthy. I certainly wasn't worthy. Maybe you're not. Maybe I'm not. But worthiness was never a requirement. Willingness is. This program does not require that we be worthy, that we have good self-esteem, that we've been honorable people, that we have no guilt or shame. It doesn't matter. All that matters, page 58, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths, doesn't matter if I'm worthy. It matters if I'm willing. The fourth thing, I've tried this so many times before and it hasn't worked. I mean, that was me, right? It took me about 7 years and I think the 51st sponsor finally. And here's what I would say. If I've got my cell phone and I've tried like 100 times to take a picture, switching the wrong button, I'm not going to be able to take a picture. It doesn't matter if I've tried 1,000 times. If I'm pushing the wrong button, I won't be able to take a picture. But then if someone shows me the right button to push, it doesn't matter that I've been unable to take pictures 100,000 times. Suddenly, I can use the camera on my phone. So you may not have been doing it in accordance with the big book before. Now we can start. And the last one, well, God would if I were seeking him, but I'm not sure I'm really seeking him. So that's a legitimate question. We need to determine, are we really seeking him? And what I would then ask someone to do is make a list of what you think you're supposed to be doing that you're not doing. And if they're real, if someone really isn't doing what she should be, then she will have trouble. And I would remind that person that page 58 says, in order to get the promises of this program, we have to be willing to go to any lengths. So as long as we're willing, it doesn't matter if we've caused this illness. It doesn't matter if we've done some things we're going to need to fix. It doesn't matter if people in our lives have made us feel shamed or unworthy or anything like that. And it doesn't matter if we've tried for 7 years with 50 sponsors. It doesn't matter. So once we get past all that on page 60, it says being convinced. Convinced of what? Being convinced that God could restore us to sanity, could remove this obsession. We're at step three, which is that we decide to turn our will and our life over to God as we understand him. So at this point, we need to do more than believe in God. We need to surrender to him. But that's step three, and that's a topic for another workshop. In a nutshell, I guess I would say that what surrender means is I make a decision to do God's will to the best of my ability and knowledge as best I can and leave the results up to him. So before I close, I'd just like to mention two things that might help us to find God. The first is to root out all dishonesty from our lives. God will not, cannot dwell with dishonesty. If we're dishonest, we may as well take a big black magic marker and write the words, "Keep out, God," across our hearts, because he absolutely won't coexist with dishonesty. And the second is to pray. For me, I believe my recovery started with two things. First, when I got my 51st sponsor, I made a decision that I was willing to go to any length. And my sponsor did not make it easy on me, but I didn't care. I remember it was like, if I have to crawl on my hands and knees through glass, if I have to move to a different state, I'm going to do it because I'm just out of options. And then I said a prayer. And the prayer I said was, God, and by the way, I had always believed in God. I guess I was what could be called a practical agnostic. I believed in God, but it had no effect on my life. It was just like if someone is a diabetic and believes in the power of insulin, but never injects it, the insulin does her no good. And the fact that she believes insulin can help does no good. But I said a prayer and I said, God, I've always had fixed ideas of what you are like and how to worship you. I'm willing to admit it's all wrong and to start over and let you show me what you're like and how to worship you. And for me, that was the moment when it was like a hand reached into my soul and yanked out the obsession. But for someone who isn't even sure that God exists, I think the prayer can go something like this. Because remember, we always have to be honest with God. We're not going to say, "Oh God, I believe in you," when we don't, because then what God hears is, "Dear God, I believe in you, but I really don't." So it can go something like this. God, I don't know if you exist. And if you exist, I don't know if you care about me. But if you do exist and you do care, I need some help. And I'll try to do what I think you want me to. The worst that can happen is that there's no God and you're just talking to like some dead air. But I believe there is a really, really a God, and that a prayer like that can be a catalyst that causes him to spring into action and to whisper to our souls, "I've been waiting for you." I believe, remember, we get our own concept of God, and my personal belief is God created the world in 6 days, took a day off, and then instead of spending the rest of eternity watching Netflix, he spends the rest of eternity launching search and rescue missions for us addicts. And by the way, when we recover, our job is to join him on these search and rescue missions for our friends. So the last thing I want to say is, let's just all clear away our prejudices, our spiritual cataracts, and let ourselves be rescued by a God who loves us madly. And as our book says, it really is true that the age of miracles is still with us. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you so much. I'm getting, my hand is cramping from all that writing. I'm copying down all these notes. Thank you so much. Okay, so before I start to take any types of questions, I just posted in the chat about our seventh tradition. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. Please help us so that this program does not go away. We are suggesting a $5 donation, and the information on how to do that is in the chat, and it takes no more than 30 seconds. Please help us. Okay, thank you so much, Janet. And we're going to start off with a question from Kate, who's been waiting patiently. Hi, Kate. Go ahead. You're next.
Hey. Hey. Thank you, everybody who helped put this on. It's really helpful to a lot of people, myself included. Janet, I understand in program dishonesty can have kind of an additional meaning. So I understand dishonesty like telling the truth. Does it also mean like accepting reality for what it is? Could you expand on exactly like maybe different forms of dishonesty?
Yeah, we're just going to keep it simple, right? So the type of dishonesty they're talking about now is like no lying, no withholding information from people who should have it. So for instance, if someone has a sponsor, and even if the sponsor doesn't say, were you abstinent yesterday? If we weren't, we need to say it, right? So it's, we need to be proactively honest, I would say. And it means no cheating on taxes, no cheating on husbands, that we live an honest life. Okay, so we'll start there. As far as accepting reality for what it is, that's probably we deal with like in the later steps, in the fourth step, when we're looking to see our part, like I'm not accepting reality. But from the get-go, I had a friend in AA, and he said, any alcoholic, when he comes around, can stop lying and stop stealing. So we'll just keep it simple, right? That like no dishonesty in the kind of dictionary definition meaning.
Could it be kind of like doing what we think God would have us do?
So like that's
doing the right thing.
That I see, I wouldn't call that dishonesty when we don't. I would say that's about surrender. That's okay. Something different. But just but honesty, like we'll start like real basic. No lying, no stealing, no cheating, no withholding information from people we know should have it.
Okay, cool.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the question, Kate. Next, we'll hear from Lori.
Hi, Janet. Just a couple of things for clarification. You said five things of, and I know what the five things were, but what was the title to the five things? And the same thing for what the two things were for. And then it just explained the ABCs again. Thank you.
Okay. So the five things were our prejudices, right? The book talks about prejudices. And then the other three things that can block us from God, I call them spiritual cataracts, right? Pomp, worship of other things, and circumstance, you know, like bad circumstances. And the ABCs, what's your question about that?
But I meant the five things, like where you said, don't deserve it, I caused this. What was the title of that?
Oh, I guess I would just say those are the reasons people give why God wouldn't restore them to sanity.
And then the two things about root out dishonesty and pray was two things to what?
My final two tips to find God.
Okay. And the ABCs was just, what was your point on the ABCs again? The three things on the ABCs.
So that's just a way that the book takes people, kind of bridges from step two to step three.
Okay. Thank you very much for the question. And next we'll hear from Barbara E.
Janet, I always love hearing from the duo, Melissa C. and Janet, and the search and rescue mission. But I was wondering if you would repeat your definition of surrender again. I liked it, but I missed getting the whole thing down.
Doing God's will to the best of my ability without worrying about the results.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Okay. We have time for a few more questions, or you can pose your question in the chat. There's a question about Venmo in the chat. If you can just, if they're asking for 4 digits, if you can try to bypass that. I know some people weren't able to get around it, but I'm not sure what the 4 digits are. Janet, I have a question for you. Okay. My question is, what do you do when you're working with somebody who comes in with a very strong conception of God, but it's not working for them, but they're holding on to something that's not working? How do you work with a sponsee like that?
It's not working because they're unable to get abstinent.
Right. Or and they're unable to get serenity.
So I guess, do they want to change their conception?
I think they want to get better.
So here's what I suggested at one point to someone who realized her conception of God wasn't working, that she had a conception of a punishing God and it wasn't working for her. So I told her to imagine, like, you know, because I think it helps to do like visualization sometime, to imagine this like punishing God, like see him, and then see like the real God coming in all loving and pulling the mask off that punishing God and exposing him as the non-God he really is. Mm. And then just, you know, getting rid of him, and then that the loving God, the real God, embracing her. You know, so it may take like some visualization to kind of rewire our thinking.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Okay, there's a question in the queue here. It says, how do you personally hear God and what are your daily practices? I now believe, but don't know how to connect. Tips for the beginning would be appreciated.
Okay. So I always tell my sponsees from day one, 30 minutes in the morning with God, prayer, meditation, spiritual reading, because this is about developing a relationship. And you can't develop a relationship with someone without spending time with them. So that's what I recommend. For myself, my practice, this is, you know, again, I'm not perfect, but this is what I generally do. I usually like first thing start, there's an app I listen to. It's about 10 minutes and I find it a good way to, you know, good spiritual app. It's a good way to start my day. It's a Christian app. So if you're not Christian, you may not want to listen to it. It's Lectio 365. And then I typically spend roughly 45 minutes divided between prayer, meditation, and spiritual reading. So my spiritual reading, I'll either like read the Bible or devotional. And I've like looked up devotionals that the founders of AA have read, and I have a bunch of those. So I'll do some kind of spiritual reading, and then I'll meditate on what I've read and asking God what his will is for me for the day, and to give me the strength to carry it out, the power to carry it out, how to help the still suffering compulsive eater. And if there's anything specific on my mind, I'll ask. And then I'll set a timer, put on some background music that sounds spiritual to me, and I'll listen. Because if I'm asking God to direct my day, I need to give him time, right? When I'm not doing anything else except listening for him. And so I have my pen, my journal, and some days I get nothing and some days I get stuff. And then I pray. So I have some praise in there. Sometimes I'll put on a worship song and sing it. So praise, gratitude, asking for help with things I need help with, and praying for people who I know need help, you know, generally my kids, not saying they need help more than anyone else, but just because they're my kids. And then I usually end with the Our Father and the St. Francis prayer, and then a prayer for God to just show me throughout the day what my next step will be and to give me whatever I need to take care of what arises. And that generally takes a solid 45 minutes.
Thank you for that question. Okay, we have a few more minutes. Who would like to ask the next question? You can raise your hand if you're on the phone, *9, please, to raise your hand. I'm *9 to raise your hand. I think *6 to unmute. I can also take a question from the queue. Deborah G, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Deborah, compulsive eater. I mean, when you, that talk was incredible. I'm so grateful to have heard you speak. What's her name, Melissa? Because I'm seeing you now. I'm seeing, anyway, when you said no stealing, no cheating, no lying, are we starting from now? Are we letting everything go that we've done in the past and starting from now? That's my question.
Do you mean like, yes. Okay. So the short answer is yes, we have to start like right now, right this second. So it's not like I'll lie, cheat, and steal. And then when I get to *9, I'll clean it up. We have to start now because God won't coexist with dishonesty. Because think about it, if I'm lying, I'm basically saying something false in order to get something I want, or to like, or to not get in trouble, or not have my sponsor drop me. But it's in order to manipulate the situation to get what I want. And what does the book say? We have to quit playing God. So really, when you get down to it, dishonesty is playing God. So yeah, we have to start like right now, stop right now.
Okay, in addition, thank you. In addition to that, I was wondering about what anything that we've done in the past that, you know, like I haven't gone through all the steps yet, I'm still on *1. So can I start in this moment and just let all that stuff go from the past? You know, I know I'll get to it in *4 and *5 and whatever, you know, from there, but can we let it all go right now from this very minute?
And so here's what I would say. You probably want to go through specifics with your sponsor, but if there's something you did yesterday, something big that should get cleaned up, we do. But if it's like, you know, it's like, I had shoplifted. So that waited until I made my amends. But from *1, I didn't shoplift anymore.
Right. Okay. All right. That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Your talk was wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Next, we'll hear from Narvette. Go ahead and unmute. There you go.
Good afternoon. Thank you. On your point, Janet, on your point, are we, when you pose the question, are we really seeking God? And you share, go through this process. And *1 was make a list of what I think I'm not doing. And I was so busy writing, I missed the last part of that. I was going to ask, could you please repeat it?
So if you think that God won't help you because you're not willing to go to any lengths, and you're not sure, write down the lengths you're not willing to go to. And let's say if someone writes down, I'm not willing to rob a bank. Well, good news, this program does not require, and in fact, doesn't even allow us to rob banks. So I would say, don't worry about it. But let's say you wrote down, I'm not willing to go to meetings. Then I would say, you know what? Then you're probably not willing to go to any lengths, and this program won't work for you.
Thank you very much for the question.
Okay, so the two steps in the process were the list and then writing down the lengths I'm not willing to go to.
Right, and then get with someone recovered and check and see if it matters what those things are. And again, if someone isn't willing to go to any lengths, they are for sure welcome to meetings. But the reason they shouldn't be sponsored is because it won't work. And then let's say a year from now, when they're really desperate and ready, they'll think, oh yeah, I tried these 12 steps and they don't work. You see? And the reason they won't work is because if we're not willing, we're not going to go through with everything the way it's required. So it's better for someone to just not even do it than to do it and think it doesn't work.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay, somebody lowered their hand. I just wanted to give them a chance. Did you lower your hand by mistake? If you'd like to speak now, go ahead. Otherwise, we'll move on to Barbara E.
Okay, hi, it's Joanne. I did lower my hand. Thank you. Thank you, Melissa and Janet, always for all your wisdom and encouragement and inspiration. I know I suffer from ADHD. And it's really hard for me. In the morning, I'm like reading so many spiritual things. I love my time with God. I have my three-ring binder with everything wonderful to read in the morning from the program. And then I have my spiritual books and I have my Bible. But the thing is, I remember Melissa said, just she lays everything out and she, you know, reads her things in the morning. And I do that. Sometimes I get so overwhelmed with I'm reading so many things. And then I don't sit long enough quietly to listen to God. Even though I have this constant communication with him all throughout the, you know, morning, noon, and night.
And excuse me, we're running short on time. Can you formulate a question,
so
please?
What's my question? My question is, any tips to help, I guess, with ADHD and how to just sit quiet? My mind is just going.
Thank you.
Again, I'm not a doctor, but I would say anyone can sit down, set a timer for 10 minutes, open your journal, ask God, God, I'm here. If you have any direction for me, I'm consecrating this time to listen. And then when distracting thoughts come, as they always do, to either just like write it down for me, if I write down a thought, it gets it out of my head. And then to just do that for 10 minutes. And if all you're doing is writing down your distracting thoughts, that's okay. At least you've given God an opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you for the question. And last, we'll hear from Barbara E. Go ahead and unmute, Barbara, and ask your question. Thank you.
Actually, it's in the form of two questions. I hope you can answer one at least. Well, the first thing is, I was blown away by all the things you do for your spiritual health in the morning, and yet you're able to get up at 7 a.m. to go on the vision meeting at 7 a.m. What time do you get up in the wee hours of the morning to get all of your practices in? And the second question was, when your sponsor told you to hire someone, I don't want to say something out of turn, to hire someone to go and clear out your home and then carry your food around with you, did you say, are you crazy? Or did you say, yes, ma'am, I'll do it?
So that's not exactly right. So I had to clear the food out of my house and only keep what I was required for the next day. Now, this isn't the things that I was asked to do isn't a requirement that everyone's asked to do. My sponsor actually said they had an intuitive thought to make it difficult for her. And for me, it worked out. So if you're your facts aren't quite on point, but I think what you're asking is, when you were asked to do things that were very difficult for you, did you want to say, are you out of your head? And the answer is no. I was so desperate and I was so grateful that someone recovered, was willing to help me, that it never occurred to me to say, this is too much, this is too hard. All I did was say, thank you.
Perfect timing. Thank you so much, everybody, for the questions. And Janet, oh my goodness, thank you so much. That was just incredible. At this time, I'm going to ask Janet if she would please put her contact information into the chat.